Hello and welcome to episode 2 of series 4 of the Poolside Pass podcast. Thanks to those that tuned in last week to listen to our episode on talent with Kevin Pickard from the Rogue Monkey. We spoke about talent identification, talent development, creating environments that bring out talent where it's hiding, the future of where we're moving with talent development. If you haven't heard that episode yet, make sure you go and check it out. It's on your favorite podcast player: Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcast, Anchor Podcast, Castbox, etc. It's wherever you usually listen to your podcasts. This week we've got Coach Rick Hall on the podcast. He's currently the head coach at City of Oxford Swimming Club, or just about to embark on that role. He's spent about 12 months out of coaching, off deck, but he's used this time to kind of really do some research and further his knowledge on not only technical research on racing on all four strokes, but also, you know, what technique looks like within training, and really nailing down some key technical models, which is a great example for coaches if ever they find themselves kind of in between jobs, or, you know, off deck for a period of time, as many of us did through 2020. Make sure you're using that time to further yourself professionally. If you're liking the podcast that I'm putting out, make sure you subscribe on whatever you listen to your podcast to. But also get in touch with us on social media. We're at the Poolside Pass on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But don't forget, all our podcasts go up on our website as well, www.thepoolsidepass.com. And without further ado, let's get into the show. Okay, so I think it's about time I introduce Rick to the podcast. Rick Hall, welcome. How are you doing?
Hi, Jamie. Yeah, great. Thank you. Thanks for inviting us on.
Yeah, no worries. Why don't we just start with kind of getting your background kind of in swimming, in coaching, and ultimately, you know, why it is you do what you do on deck with swimmers.
Yeah. So I think, like most coaches, I started off as a swimmer. So I originally swam for Preston Swimming Club in the Northwest, and then moved on to a performance squad called Gallica, which I swam with them for around about 5 years, under a coach, really coach called Dave Everts, and later Rob Greenwood. And during that time, I did my qualifications, and so I was doing a little bit of work with Preston at the time. And then I finished swimming at 19. So, you know, I got to a national level, but that was probably about my limit. And that was back in 2008. And Rob, who was the head coach at the time, he basically invited us onto Poolside and said, look, would you like to, you know, start doing some coaching with us? And spent the next 2 years at Gallica, which was a fantastic basing, you know, a real good opportunity to learn from some great coaches and work with some really, really good swimmers. And at the same time, I was also at 19, I was head coach of Blackburn Centurions, which was a small club in the Northwest. But it was great because I was working as a head coach from quite a young age, but also working with Gallica, which was, you know, a performance squad. And then sort of got the opportunity. It was in 2010 to move out to Dubai. The funding was, you know, probably going to get cut from Gallica. And sadly, it doesn't exist anymore. It's no longer a program, because it was a great setup. And with that, I got the opportunity to move out to Dubai to work for Hamilton Aquatics. So I went over there as head development coach, and then later as assistant head coach, and had 5 really, really great years working with Ash and Chris and some fantastic swimmers. And I really, really enjoyed my time out there. And then I decided that I wanted to progress again in my coaching. I wanted to be a head coach again. So moved back in 2015. We moved to London to a club called Hackney Aquatics. And I think most people back in 2015 probably wouldn't have heard of Hackney Aquatics. It was a relatively small club in London. I think their main aspirations was to get to county level. But they had a fantastic committee who had, you know, some real ambition and some real good people on there. And I really enjoyed working with them, and we had a really clear vision of what we wanted to achieve. And, you know, for for 5 years, we grew and grew. And sort of we went from around about 150 swimmers, probably just a little bit less, up to 450 swimmers by the time I finished last year. So it was a really enjoyable project. And then about this time last year, so it was probably around March, actually, 2020, I got the opportunity to move out to New Zealand. And it was, again, a fantastic opportunity that for me and my family, like, we couldn't turn down. It was, you know, I was going to be working with a school program out there and some really good people. And we were meant to be moving in July 2020. But sadly, it wasn't to be. And sort of we've been waiting and waiting and waiting ever since, sort of month after month, hoping that it would come off. The borders have been closed and they're just not letting anybody in. So we're now sort of, well, it's around about 12 months later, we haven't been able to get out. But what that's led to is another opportunity. So I'm going to be now working with Oxford and going to be the head coach there.
So in terms of kind of coaching and yourself as a coach, what is it that, obviously now it's your job, but, you know, in the first instances, perhaps, you know, when, you know, because I think everyone knows, no one coaches really for the money. What is it that you love about your job, and what is it that makes you keep going back on deck every time?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, so I was actually chatting to, I went up to Stirling and to a program called First over the last week, and there was an assistant coach at First called Gulsum, who, she basically summed it up to me. She said, you know, I absolutely love doing this. She just got out of swimming and said that it was, you know, for her, it wasn't a job. It was just something that she really enjoyed. And, you know, when I started out coaching, that, you know, that's how it felt. It was just enjoyment. It never felt like a job. And I think, you know, the more that you work within it, you know, perhaps it does become more of a job. It's certainly a career, but I think the basis of it never changes. You still enjoy working with athletes and developing athletes. And for me, I enjoy developing clubs. I certainly enjoyed the project that we had at Hackney. And I think having so much time out over this last year has allowed me to sort of reassess things. You know, I got to a point around Christmas thinking I might not get back into coaching because, you know, we were in complete limbo land. Like, we weren't sure whether we were going to go to New Zealand. We weren't sure what was happening from month to month. And there was obviously no jobs coming up at the time. And we were thinking, right, like, what is the next opportunity? So I was looking at other options, but, you know, having chats with my family and my wife, and we said, you know what, like, you've enjoyed what you've done for so long now. Like, it'd be a shame to leave and to get out of it. So, yeah, I just, for me, I've not been on poolside properly now for 12 months, and I'm just dying to get back on. I'm just excited. I've got that buzz again, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to starting.
Brilliant. So we're going to speak about what you've been up to in the last 12 months now. As you said, you know, you've not really been on poolside properly for 12 months, and, you know, that's given you an opportunity to be able to kind of, you know, delve into some research projects and kind of further your learning and your knowledge. What kind of, and obviously you had it was almost an enforced break off the poolside, right? But what really kind of motivated you to say, oh, I'm going to use this time to kind of do some research and to, you know, to make sure I can share some of those findings? What kicked all that off for you?
Yeah, so I got to July last year, and so I'd just finished Hackney, and I realized that I think for pretty much 5 years I hadn't stopped, you know, I hadn't really had any sort of real time off and a break in terms of, you know, focusing on myself. So it was a real unique opportunity, and I think I spent the first month or so certainly through lockdown doing what most coaches do and going on every Zoom chat and every podcast and everything. It was great. And then I got to around August and realized, you know, this is an opportunity now to have a little bit of time and a bit of a break, and I went off that and just spent some time with family, which was amazing. But I got bored really easily. I wanted to get back into it, and without actually being able to coach, I thought this is a great opportunity now to spend some time working on myself and developing things that or areas of my coaching that I had an interest in and perhaps haven't had the time to actually do. So I actually started off by, I think it was in September, I wrote my philosophy again, or my coaching philosophy, and just went over it and realized how high technical development and developing swimmers to be skillful and technically great, you know, sat within my philosophy. And I think that's where it started off, you know, and from that, I realized, right, let's actually spend this time and this use this opportunity to really research and to look at videos and to ask coaches and to work with different coaches. And I ended up sort of spending hours and hours and hours just watching YouTube videos and some of the great stuff that coaches have been putting out. So James Gibson's put some great videos out. Dave Hemmings has put some great stuff out, and I was just watching and just making lots of notes. There are a few really good presentations through lockdown as well. Ian Pope had one, you know, about how the strokes differ slightly through different events. Dave Marsh had mentioned it as well, but there was no real detail behind it. And what I wanted to do was just spend some time really looking at differences between how the strokes change across the different events, and just coming up with some technical models that when I did get back into coaching, I could use. And I ended up spending quite a lot of time doing that, and then presented it to a group of coaches that we sort of chat each month and just talk all things coaching. And they had a few great ideas. And then I presented it to their clubs. And then through that, I had a few chats with Dave Hemmings and Kev Renshaw, who were great and gave me some real good ideas as well. And we just talked it through. And then from there, just been presenting it ever since and using the sort of the time that I've got to do something that at the time was so out of my comfort zone. You know, presenting and doing that was so different. I've never done it before. It was massively out of my comfort zone, and but I enjoyed it. So here we are.
Fantastic. So the first kind of big kind of project, as it say, you looked at was kind of the different styles of racing techniques across the four strokes. Now I think you presented this to a group of coaches from the BSCA as well, and I was on that call, and you know, I just found it really interesting at the level, like you say, the level of detail you went into analyzing the strokes. Talk us through, I think you might have just kind of touched on it a minute ago, talk us through your process of kind of gathering the data on that and really trying to delve into, because it, you know, it seems like it must have taken an absolute mammoth amount of time to watch all those different swimmers, break it down, summarize everything, then find the drills that fit into that, and then find more examples. So you know, how did you go about kind of gathering all that information?
Yeah, I mean, it probably took a month and a half, maybe a little bit longer, of just watching videos. And I just went through every event and just looked at how the strokes differ and change across each event and certainly each race. And just again through talking with different coaches, you know, everything that I've done, you know, I've put it down on paper, but there's been a lot of coaches that have helped along the way, and you know, it's certainly not just myself, but you know, everyone's had little ideas and inputs, and from there just put together this model, which I think sort of summarizes, you know, what each type of stroke, or you know, what each style looks like, and then how it perhaps fits to certain events or fits better to certain events. And I think the more that I've gone through and presented, the more that it's adapted as well. So perhaps that one that I did with BSCA right at the start is perhaps a little bit different. I think most of the main concepts are the same, but there's been lots of little things that have been added onto it as I've sort of been watching more and more and chatting to more coaches. And what's great is that every time I've done one of these, there's been questions or there's been points that I thought, you know what, that's great, and you know, I've added those to it as well. And so you know, it's been a continuous process of putting it together, and then it's led on to, perhaps go on to it in a little bit, a few more presentations which I've put together.
What were some of the key kind of
takeaways that you got from doing that project? You know, I understand obviously it was quite a big one, and obviously you covered 13 different styles of racing, but what were some of the real key things you took away from that?
Yeah, I think the first thing is that technique is very individual, and what might work for one swimmer isn't necessarily going to work for another swimmer. And you look across a race, you know, and you think, oh, I've got a style that fits that type of race or that distance. But you look across it and there are several different styles within that race. You know, every swimmer could be swimming something different. And there's a great example. I think it's the women's 53 from Worlds a couple of years ago. And you look across the pool and there are about five or six different styles of swimming it. Perhaps the sort of the main principles are quite similar, but a lot of different styles. And I think it is very individual. I think you can put a broad sort of idea across, you know, what a certain event might look like, but then it's so important that it's individualized to the actual swimmer. And I think, you know, if I started off, I always knew that, you know, there was different ways to swim the events, but it was putting it together and looking at it. And like you say, I came up with 13 different ways to swim it, to swim different strokes and different events. And they do seem to, you know, in a way suit each sort of event, you know, in each distance, but, you know, the strokes can change dramatically. You know, you can see a huge difference from how a swimmer would swim a 200 to how they would swim a 50. And in some circumstances, like breaststroke, for example, you're almost looking like it's a different type of stroke altogether. You know, it's so the you know, the actual stroke itself is so different. But what is very similar across all of them are that the basics are very similar. So the key basic principles, which I think world-class athletes do to a really, really good level, they are very, very similar across all of the different events and different styles.
You mentioned there about, you know, even within you can see the differences in the way it's being swum. I did a little bit of work just looking at Anton Chupkov's 200 breaststroke, and you know, even within the same race, he's swimming it differently in the first 100 than he is in the second 100. So, you know, it just goes to show, you know, how versatile at the top level some of these swimmers can be in terms of being able to change up their technique.
Yeah, I think Chupkov's a great example of that, and I think 200 events especially, you can see that variation. You've got to have that ability to change through the gears. And Chupkov, I use the example, I think his first 50 looks like he's doing a 400 breaststroke, and then his last 50 is like he's doing a 50 breaststroke. It goes, but what he's very good at is being incredibly efficient at changing through the gears, and he's got a huge stroke rate range. So obviously he's going out pretty long and relaxed down that first 50, but then the range that he's able to get up to on that last 50 is phenomenal.
So in terms of, you know, you said you got those kind of 13 different ways of racing that. Is that something that, you know, within your coaching, you're going to use as a bit of a blueprint for technical delivery going forward?
Yes, it is. And I think it's important to understand the differences between the different events and how you would take, you know, a 200 type stroke and then apply it, you know, and then change it so that you can swim fast over 100 or a 50. But like I said, it is very individual. So it's not that I'm going to do that with every single swimmer. And it's certainly something that I would only start doing once they've got the basics and the training model at a really, really good standard. Because I think without them, it's then very difficult to work at these different styles.
So you just mentioned there the training model. Now, you know, as a great little segue into the next kind of project and presentation that you worked on, you went to look into kind of training strokes. What were the key differences for you in terms of training strokes versus racing strokes? Were there as many variations, or was it kind of more basic and more simplified for the training strokes?
Yeah, for me, it was about getting the basics right. And it's something I think James Gibson mentions on one of your podcasts about doing the basics really, really well and doing them intentionally well, consistently over and over again. And that's basically what the training strokes model was about. It's about looking at what the basics of the stroke were, making sure that then, you know, swimmers and coaches were able to then implement it. And, you know, you look at the sort of the racing styles, that there are going to be certain styles that you just physically cannot do for the length of a training session. So it's about having a training stroke that you're able to do, you know, within the demands of training, especially from a young age where, you know, volume might be increasing, intensity might be increasing, and they're learning to train. You know, they're not necessarily learning to race it from a young age. They're learning how to train. And you've got to have a stroke that can handle that, that can be efficient enough to handle them demands. And then, you know, it's important that, you know, once they do start to change their stroke, or it might be that, you know, they're getting into more of the racing styles, that they're able to then switch between the two. So they've still got to train it. They've still got to do, you know, the race work. They've still got to do drill work and technical work on the racing stroke. But you can't expect a swimmer to swim a 50 type stroke or, you know, large volumes and stuff. So it's important to have that model. And it's something that I think certainly from a young age, just looking at what those basic principles are and getting them right can really help them develop the racing strokes later on.
So you mentioned there about, you know, that kind of being more appropriate in terms of the training models for those age group swimmers. Like, I think a great example of that is, you know, in the racing strokes, you identified kind of the straight arm freestyle technique for the 50 meter events. You know, it's not something you can go away with in your aerobic sets and start swimming straight arm freestyle, because it's just not, it's not the right way to swim those kind of sets. In terms of at age group level, you know, could you, I know it's obviously, again, a very big question, this one, but could you kind of sum up the training stroke model for each stroke very briefly, if possible?
Yeah, yeah. So it does normally go into like a 45-minute hour presentation, but I'll try and sum them up. And again, it's just, you know, looking at what the basic key principles for each stroke are. And I think for fly, making sure that swimmer gets their entry right, and the entry in the press, you know, it's not just about entering, but it's that press through the chest as well, because that will then set up what they do with the rest of the body and the kick. High elbow, I think you look across any fly event, you know, at any world level, swimmers are swimming with a high elbow. And I think, you know, if you can get them to do that from a young age and encourage that, you know, it doesn't matter what type of event or distance they're swimming, it's still the same. And then just getting the kick right, making sure that they're effective on the kick, kicking in both directions, kicking through the body. For the backstroke, I think the entry and the catch, getting that right, making sure that they're entering in the right position and then catching the water well, that's key. And again, you look at across any world-class backstrokers, they're getting that right, because it's going to set up the propulsive phase. It's going to set up the pull. You know, if they're not entering in the right position, you know, it's going to then send off the rest of the body and the pull. Also getting the head position right, making sure heads are still. And then the rotation and the timing of the rotation, making sure they're actually timing that final part of the push on the pull and using that to connect and rotate effectively. For the breaststroke, for me, it's about efficiency. I like to use the sort of the words opposites aligned. So as you're doing the propulsive phase of the stroke, then the opposite side has got to be streamlined. So if you're doing the propulsive phase of the kick, then your arms have got to be streamlined and in line. And then as you're doing the propulsive phase of the pull, same thing with the legs. And that does change slightly. It does change as you go through some of the you know, the 50 and the 100 strokes. But certainly for that base model, you know, it's about getting the stroke to be as efficient as possible. And I think it's a great thing to go back to, especially when swimmers grow and their coordination goes, and, you know, perhaps they've suddenly got a difference in power to weight ratio. And you see so often with breaststroke that, you know, like swimmers that are really fast from a young age will suddenly start to slow down once they go through puberty. Go back to just getting that basic principle right, getting the opposites aligned and being efficient can really help. And then on the freestyle, I think the freestyle is perhaps the stroke that you often see with the most technical flaws, because it's the one that's swam so often. And because we do so much of our training on it, it can often lead to a lot of bad habits. So for me, just getting the lines right, so making sure that they're getting into that 11 and 1 position with their arms, getting the catch and into that high elbow position, and then just making sure that their body line rotation is correct. So they're all just simple basics that I think most coaches probably know already and, you know, probably do. But it's just making sure that they do them regularly and going back to them and not being afraid at, you know, even at a, you know, at a senior level to go back to them basics and getting them right.
I think you mentioned there about opposites aligned on the breaststroke. And yeah, I think that's another thing where, you know, Chipkov's a great example for that. You know, when he's, because when you think about breaststroke, it's a very resistance heavy stroke, right? The pull is not a streamlined friendly movement, and neither is the kick, right? So, you know, like you say, it's really important that when someone's pulling, the legs aren't adding any extra resistance. And when someone's kicking, the arms aren't adding any extra resistance, and, you know, about the efficiency. So that was, you know, great point. You mentioned as well how, you know, some of the best swimmers in the world, parts of their technique are just there to help set up another part of the technique. And I think, you know, that's a really important thing to remember as well, right? And I think during the first lockdown, we did a few at the club where I was coaching, we did a few kind of technical workshops for our swimmers. And, you know, we noticed that, you know, perhaps on a touch turn or on some of the skills around the walls, part of the skill is setting up another part of the skill, right? To make sure that, you know, for example, when you're driving off the wall, you know, their foot placement onto the wall sets up the drive so you can get as much out of the drive as possible. And I think sometimes that's something that might be missed a little bit with age group swimmers. You know, everything needs to be seen to be kind of doing something. Well, sometimes it's about setting something else up so you can do that even better, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that I looked into, and it's, you know, I think, again, a lot of coaches probably know this, but you look at a skill, you look at, you know, a technique, and you think, right, well, that's what they're doing wrong, and you try and change it. But a lot of the time, there's something that you have to do before in order for them to actually progress with that technique. So it could be that they've got physical limitations, or there is some sort of movement limitations that they need to then go back to having a look at what it looks like on land, you know, and developing that before they can actually then progress their technique. And, you know, I think a lot of the time we look at the stroke and we go, right, I want to try and change that. But, you know, they just simply might not be able to do it, or they might not have an understanding of doing it. And the other thing as well is that you've got to think of it as a cycle. You know, we spend a lot of time perhaps within the cognitive stage of learning, where we're breaking down the stroke, we're doing it in small components, we're putting it into, you know, drills and doing it really slowly, which is great, because, you know, that's going to help them learn, you know, what the small components of the stroke are. But then that's not going to be applicable when they get to a race and they've got to do it under pressure and it's got to be autonomous. They've got to then work on that, and they've got to work through what's called the associative stage of learning, where, you know, they're developing the stroke under a little bit more pressure, they're perhaps adding a little bit more resistance to it, or putting it into some faster swims. And that's the sort of phase where I think we've got to spend a lot more of the time, you know, in developing the stroke. And then when you get to that pressure situation, it should be autonomous. They should know how to do it. And it's a continuous cycle of recapping the cognitive stage, going through that associative stage, applying the contrast, applying, you know, the pressure to it, and then putting it into your race situation.
Brilliant. So kind of, in the last year or so, you know, we've spoken about two of the big projects you've undertaken. You must have, you know, had to really take on board, you know, lots of knowledge, lots of new information over the last year or so. What are you, you know, as well as those Zoom calls and podcasts you said you were engaging with early on, as you kind of start to return to the poolside and start to get, you know, actively involved in coaching again, which, you know, at the start you said you were, you know, very, very excited to finally get a chance to be able to do again. What were your three kind of big takeaways from this period outside of coaching, where you're really going to start implementing some of those three things now?
Yeah, and that's it. There's been so much, like so many different chats and podcasts and some amazing stuff. It's like hard to then sort of think, right, what am I actually going to do? So I think the first thing is appreciate what you do and really enjoy what you do. Because, you know, for me, that's this year has been such a roller coaster of various things. It's like, you know, you get to this point and you think, you know what, I actually really enjoy coaching, and I'm, you know, it's such a privilege to be in this sport and to be doing what we do. And also don't be afraid to get out of your comfort zone. You know, when we are in situations like this or opportunities come up, you know, and it's very easy to say, you know, let's just stick to what we're used to, and you know, it's, let's do the easy thing. But I think sometimes just getting out of your comfort zone and doing like what you've been doing with the podcast, and you know, just going out and presenting, it's been quite nerve-wracking sometimes speaking to a lot of your peers and coaches that you look up to. But I think in the long run, it's a real good thing. I think one of the things that I've taken from a lot of coaches is the importance of having a vision for your program, and a philosophy, and having values within that, and making sure that if you do have a vision, that you communicate it regularly and that you take people along with you. And I think when I was at Hackney, we had a great vision, and we had a few people that were really engaged in that, but it took a while for everyone to really understand it. And I think it's so important that if you've got something that you want to work towards, that you're bringing everyone along with you. And it's certainly something that a lot of the American coaches have talked about. What else? I think one of the other things is have an intention for everything that you do. And this is something that Dave Hemmings spoke about quite a lot. And I think it just really resonated with me, you know, making sure that everything that we do has got an intention. And I think so often we spend so much time, you know, trying to do all the little fine details, but we forget perhaps the 99% of, you know, the basics, the things that are going to make swimmers better and make your program better. You know, perhaps spending more time on them because the intention is you know, it's a greater intention, rather than the perhaps the 1% of things that don't make a massive difference. I think that's something that I'm going to try and focus on. And having that intention, like Dave said, you know, even just something as simple as writing it on the board so that your swimmers know what that intention is, you know, before the start of a session. But yeah, I think they're my three things.
Perfect. Now, that was kind of three things within the main topic of discussion for the day. But as we kind of roll towards the end of each episode, I always ask guests for kind of their top three tips on something. So you got another three tips to think of now. So much of your last 12 months has been used up kind of, you know, looking at technical aspects, and especially of world-class swimmers. I'm going to ask you today for your top three tips on analyzing world-class technique and then applying it potentially to those non-elite swimmers.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the first one is, and I've said it a few times, is get the basics right and do them really, really well, consistently and under pressure. And I think that's what leads to high performance, you know, making sure you get those basics right. Don't be afraid to use video and involve the athlete in the process. So it's not just direction. It's not just you telling them what to do. Get them to see what they're doing, and then get them to understand it as well by asking the questions or giving the points of you know, how they can improve. And then I think the final one is look holistically. So look at what is actually causing the issue, what's causing the technical flaw. So it could be a physical thing. It could be something that they've got to develop, you know, in terms of their water skills, just their balance or coordination in the water or their hold of the water. It could be that they just need to be better at learning and understanding, and that's something that you need to develop with them. So look at it holistically. Don't just go straight to, oh, let's try and do these drills and then hope for the best when they get to the next competition. You know, it could be a bigger process that's involved, because changing technique isn't just going to happen straight away. You know, you can make some improvements, but it is a long-term process, and you know, it could take months, it could take years for them to really develop the stroke that you want. So look at the bigger picture with it and look at it holistically.
Brilliant. Rick, thank you so much for your time. It's been great just to sit and talk technique with you. I think just from my perspective, listening to you talking about technique, it, you know, resonates quite a bit with me. I think, you know, you think about technique in a similar kind of way to kind of how I've been developing my way to think about technique as well. So it's been good to chat to someone that kind of has similar ideas on that front. If coaches are listening to this right now, want to find out more about kind of your 13 racing style, 13 racing styles, or your training models, how can they kind of find out more information about that stuff?
Yeah, I think just probably the best way is just get in touch on Twitter. So just Coach Rick Hall on Twitter, and then I'll just usually reply straight away. Or if you've got my email, I can send out my email in the show notes or something like that. And yeah, I'm more than happy for anyone to send me an email and we can have a chat about it.
Perfect. Rick, thank you so much for your time. It's been great having you on. Hope you enjoyed coming on the show as well. And yeah, thank you very much.
Great. Cheers, Jamie. I appreciate it. Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of episode 2 of Series 4 of the Poolside Pass podcast. It was just great to hear how positively Rick's been using the time that he's had over the last year, and nice to hear his take on technique, technical models he's been developing, with some fantastic takeaways for all four strokes, not only for age group coaches, but for those working with youth and senior athletes as well. So some food for thought there around technical development too. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe and share around your own coaching network with coaches that might not be aware of these podcasts just yet. And also, we're really interested to hear your feedback on the podcast we're putting out, so get in touch with us. You can go to our website, www.poolsidepass.com. There's a big get in touch button on the top banner, but also on social media. We're at the Poolside Pass on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Until next time, take care.